The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of the Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike, brought to you by Palm Beach Atlantic University, Orlando. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gilland.
Hey, everyone, and welcome back to the program Afternoons with Mike right here on The Shepherd. Happy to be with you today. You know, the month of June has been a special month for those suffering from PTSD. We just crossed over the National Awareness Day for PTSD, and that stands for Post-Traumatic Stress Disorder. Survivors of sexual assault, serious accidents, natural disasters, those serving in the military often come back home finding themselves dealing with these issues. And that would be the case for a young man that we have today on the program. Here today in the studio, in our main studios in Orlando, with Brian Fay. Brian is the owner of a company. This is a great company because I love video, and I'm having been in television. I love the abilities that technology has brought to the whole presentation of video. And that's what you do. Welcome, Brian.
Thanks for having me.
It's so nice to have you here. Now, I'm not sure how Brittany first heard about your company, which is called Boundless Drone Services. Now, Boundless Drone, that would be a word that a lot of people wouldn't have thought of with video until a number of years ago when drones. Now, when I was growing up, to drone meant just to go on and on and on and on and on. It's like an endless drone. That's what my professor in college did. But boy, today, what has happened with the whole technology of like radio, what we would have called radio controlled aircraft, now a drone. It's just amazing. How did you get into that?
So what started as a hobby for me, like most things, became a passion that turned into a career. And I know that we were looking for something last year to get into business with. And I said, you know, drones are just blowing up, whether it be solar panel examinations, if you're doing cell towers, construction site mapping, drones were getting their ways and everything, even agriculture. They're using drones to spray crops. They're using drones to plant seeds.
Actually spray?
Yeah, you can actually get you can buy a whole, like it's eight drones that you program, and they just automatically go up and fly your whole field and spray your entire field down. They have the same technology that it sprays seeds out. So that as it flies over. So the huge farming companies are actually getting rid of their combines and going to drones to take care of a lot of their issues.
Now, you know, loving movies that have a lot of technology and things like that in it, you see a lot of movies that are talking about the military use of drones and the weaponry use and I'm sure that a lot of that is probably true, and if not all of it, and it's probably more so than what we even know about, I would imagine, in the military.
Absolutely. Actually, that's where I first got into drones was I was one of our platoon's pilots for, it's not one of the fancy drones. It was the big ones that they use up in the sky are called Predator drones. This one was a little tiny handheld drone that had a screen and something to just do basic reconnaissance with. We kept it in the back of our Humvee, and if we came into a situation, we don't know if there was a roadside bomb up ahead around a corner, you just pop, like literally you throw it like a paper airplane and it
takes off.
And it takes off. Yeah, it's pretty cool. And that one was way more automated than the ones that I get to play with now. I mean, you just pressed a button and that thing did pretty much everything for you. You just had to look at the screen.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's where I first got into it.
Well, we're going to hear more about your company and the video use. And again, you're talking about a guy here that I love video stuff. I was in television, and back in the day when TV cameras were big and clunky, and now everyone carries in their iPhone a camera. Technology has changed the whole video scene.
Absolutely.
All the way around. But let's talk about you for a moment. You're here with your lovely wife, Alice, who is choosing not to be on mic today, but glad to have her along in the studio with us as well. Tell me how it is that you, or where was it that you grew up, and how did you come to know the Lord?
So believe it or not, I'm actually an Orlando native. I know that that's rare and few, far between.
It is very rare.
And so I was raised at First Baptist Church of Orlando, right over on John Young and Kirkman. And that was my home church for years. I would say they're still my home church. I just watch them online now.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's I born and raised First Baptist Church of Orlando. And I think it was when I was, I don't know how far you want me to go into this.
Oh, man.
Yeah. It was when I was 18 years old with them. I went on my first mission trip. And that's what I would say first sparked my desire to serve. I really enjoyed that mission trip, came back.
Where did you go?
Romania. Mm. Yeah. It was, we started up a vacation Bible school. It was a 2-week trip. It was like 15 days, 2 days travel time. And our whole job was to start a church and a vacation Bible school at that church for, it was the gypsy children in the area.
Mm-hmm.
So we played soccer and ran basically Sunday school activities for 2 weeks.
Now back in that day, back a number of years ago, Romania was used for a lot of missions trips, especially in orphanages. Did you see any of those?
We did. We went to see mm-hmm. two different orphanages, and apparently and I'm guessing this is what you're referring to, that they're huge for having orphans adopted mm-hmm. out of that country.
Yeah, big.
Yeah, and I didn't know that until I went on that trip, but there's like very crowded orphanages there.
I would wonder if I didn't know some people that went with you on that trip. That's crazy, because there were people from Orlando that were regularly going over to Romania during that time, some of them spending months over there.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Because there's a lot of work to be done mm-hmm. in that area. And it was very open to the gospel, so there were a lot of open ways that people could go in that day. But, you know, it is amazing, isn't it, the impact that a trip out of the United States, what it will do to one's heart?
It definitely removed some of the shelter that I had been placed around me. I mean, I thought that I had an unsheltered life until you go to, I mean, some of the areas, I mean, I know Romania is not necessarily a third world country, but some of the areas that we were in were definitely very third world. And, mm-hmm. and having yeah. those safeties removed, those protections, those comforts, and being taken out of my comfort zone did absolutely that. Made me want more of it.
I think one of the things that's been a real downer for a lot of people growing up in America is this notion that the way we live and the things that we have in our life, they're universal. They're mm-hmm. everywhere. Everybody in every country would have that kind of an upbringing, and that couldn't be farther from the truth.
I shared a story with Brittany, I think, actually, where it was this one gypsy girl's birthday. She was turning 11 or 12, and all she got from her family was a box of chocolates.
Mm-hmm.
And we were all there in attendance for her birthday, and she went around and she gave every child and every adult a piece of chocolate. And by the time that wow. she got to us, I mean, like, literally, I'm taking like the last out of like two chocolates, and she didn't have a single one for herself. And she just sat there with the biggest smile on her face while everybody was eating her birthday present.
Wow.
And I was like, even now, it still gets me choked up thinking about it, because I was like, wow, that's just like so opposite. And here in America, it's birthday boy gets the first slice of cake. You know, mm-hmm, it's everything geared towards self. And to watch a completely selfless act on a day where she could have been totally selfish was just very different for me.
And I think it's really good for every person at some point in their life to have that kind of a lesson.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is, we grow up, man, we grow up in opulence here. It's just ridiculous. It's sometimes considered to be scandalous the way we are so blessed in America. And yet, with that blessing, you think there would be a residual or a commensurate gratitude for being, and that's really not there. Yeah. So many times there's entitlement that people experience, and they think, well, I should be. I'm a great guy. I should be getting this. And the truth of it is, we are not that great, folks. We've been given grace that is just amazing. So it's really wonderful to hear your experience.
Absolutely.
And to see how that changed you. How early on was it that you made the decision toward military? Because I know you spent some of your life serving our country, and thank you for doing that.
I appreciate that. Well, I made that decision, I would say, shortly when I started going to college shortly after I got back from this mission trip, because this was my senior year, summer between high school and college was the mission trip. I struggled just wanting to stay in school and learning what they were trying to teach me. And I guess I just was itching to go and do something bigger, more greater at that time. And the Army was what I really felt myself getting pulled towards. So I did about a year and a half, so about three semesters at college. I said, no, I'm done. I'm taking a break, and went and signed during 2007, which was the second surge into Iraq. So they were given really good bonuses for a short amount of time and letting you pick whatever job you want to do, which my dumb self picked one of the more dangerous jobs, and that was a cavalry scout. Matter of fact, when they were going through and they're showing you like the expected lifespan of each person and how they last in combat, 13 seconds is what a cavalry scout is, the expected lifespan when engaged by a large enemy force. And it's because of a small group. We only operate in like, it's like 4 to 7 people.
And you knew that before?
I knew that before going in, which is my mom, bless her heart, when I told her all this information, she, I think, wanted to slap me.
Do you have a death wish?
Right. And I think I did at the time. I think not necessarily a death wish, but I had an adrenaline wish, like something just to test my limits and be put where even more out of my comfort zone. And I did just that. I went to training in September of 07 and got assigned to 3rd ID, 3rd Brigade with 115 Infantry at Fort Benning, Georgia in 08. Deployed with them in 09. Got that combat deployment under my belt, and I came back wanting less to be the trigger puller and more to be the person helping people that had gotten injured. So I re-enlisted to reclass to medic. Became a medic, and then I was a shift supervisor in an emergency room at a military hospital when a opportunity came up for me to deploy to Afghanistan. And this was in 2012. I absolutely volunteered. And
so two of the biggest theaters in our recent history.
Correct, yes.
You've served in both of them.
Yes. Yeah. So wow. Iraq was 2009-10 and Afghanistan was 2012.
Mm-hmm.
Two different jobs, and I would say that I love the medic more. It was harder because you were on that side of treating the people that I considered sometimes closer than my own family, and their life was in your hands when it came down to it.
Mm-hmm.
But the satisfaction that you got of not only just helping them but also helping the local population and just was nothing. There's nothing else like it.
Wow. Now, what kind of training did you have to go through to be a medic?
So it's 17 weeks of training at Fort Sam Houston, Texas. And the beginning part of it, the first 9 weeks, is actually just an EMT basic training. So you actually get a nationally registered EMT certification. And then from there, you go into your combat medic. So this is the stuff that operates on a physician assistant level. So you're able to pack wounds, do minor surgeries, I would say it's incision drains, all sorts of things. And then the trauma part of it, which is tourniqueting and stopping bleeding and preventing loss of life, which is, they really push the hemorrhage, airway, breathing and circulation.
Yeah, I'm hoping that we haven't lost already a lot of our listeners, like who have weak stomachs. My goodness. My interest in all this is high. And at one point I thought I wanted to be a doctor, and that didn't last, but I've always been interested in what you're describing and thinking about, at the same time realizing that you're seeing this not in a sterile environment of a hospital or a doctor's room, but actually in the field of war, where some of these people, what would be the worst injury you saw?
I would say, besides the injuries that caused death, the worst injury that I saw and treated and person walked away from was he got shot with a 7.62 round, which is a large AK round, and it entered his armpit underneath the body armor and exited out his right butt cheek. So it had went through basically his whole thoracic cavity and exited.
Oh.
And so what was happening was we were in the process of trying to get air to come in and evac him out because we had multiple casualties. This was in 2012, when the fighting in the spring was really hot in the Helmand Province border, which is where the Marines were operating, and they would constantly need help from our, because we worked in their area of operations as well. So air couldn't come in because we were in the middle of a firefight, and they couldn't land safely because they were going to get shot at. So I had to maintain this guy's stats for about 3 hours. And around hour and a half, hour two, he started to crash because I can only, it's something called a needle chest decompression. So it's a needle that we stick in the second and third rib, and it lets the air out. I don't know if you've seen Three Kings with Matt Damon and well, anyways, the thing that they do to him in that movie where it lets the air out, they make it very dramatic in the movie, and you hear it, but you don't hear that. It's just the lungs just automatically inflate. But after a while, the needles don't work anymore, and you actually need a surgery intervention, which is called a chest tube. You let the fluid drain out, and that's put over here in the side. So I actually had to do a field chest tube. I had, before that moment ever, I had only ever done it on a goat. There's something called the goat lab in the Army where before you deploy, you practice trauma procedures on goats that are under anesthesia and are euthanized afterwards, so they don't feel anything. But I had never, I'd only done it on that. And so I called up to my PA, and it's funny that you bring up the sterile environment. I called up to him to get permission to do it in the back of a Humvee. And he said, heck no, what are you thinking? That's an operating procedure. And I'm like, I mean, if I wanted, if he could get there, he'd be there.
Yeah, right. If I could get him over to the walk-in clinic,
trust
that'd be
me,
great.
I don't want to do this.
Yeah, really.
And so I ended up doing, I mean, and this was without general anesthesia. I cut into this guy and put a tube that's about that long into his chest, and all the fluid just started coming out. And I mean, from there, he was able to be stabilized and go back. So that was probably that was the most intense for me, most real treatment. Like, I mean, of course, I saw a lot of legs that were blown off, and because roadside bombing is a huge thing. But the thing about those is the most I can do is I throw a tourniquet on, I stop the bleeding, and I stabilize the patient. Mm-hmm. It wasn't something as like having to continue to treat the patient for so long and keep that life from being lost.
Man, the things you have seen, I think, it's a miracle to me that you're now doing drones. Wow, because you've seen a lot. And with that kind of experience, I just want to say thank you for serving.
I appreciate it.
Thank you. Boy, that's really great. I am with today, this young man is Brian Fay. Boundless Drone Services is his company. And I had no idea that your story was quite as exciting as it is, but I've got such respect for anyone that goes into our country's service to help our freedoms, to keep our freedoms, and to really do the work that you've done, and doing it really volunteering for some of the most dangerous, risky stuff. Brian, I'm just really I'm really blown away at that. But thank you again, and I'll be back with Brian and learn more about this exciting company that he has called Boundless Drone Services. Don't go away. This is Afternoons with Mike right here on The Shepherd. Oh, man, if you've just joined us, you missed an exciting segment one. My guest today is Brian Fay. He is the owner of Boundless Drone Services in Orlando, and we're going to talk more about his company. When you think about all the things that you did in the service as a medic and hearing these stories of helping really save a person's life who've lost a limb in a terrible IED interlude where people, like you said, it happens all the time when you're in Iraq or Afghanistan, these roadside bombs or, you know, other types of devices that go off. Sometimes they're buried in fields like mines, but there's a lot to be done there. And one of the things that really does happen a lot with people who are serving as you did, and they come back and they've got these images, they've got these memories. It's called PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. And was that something that you dealt with?
I would say if you had talked to me 7 years ago when I got out in 2014, we wouldn't even be talking right now. Just because talking about the stuff that I just shared would have gotten me so uptight. So, I mean, just like prior to the point of having an anxiety attack, just thinking about it. I mean, so yes, I would
the
say
answer would be yes.
Yeah, I dealt with PTSD, or I still deal with it. It's something that I hope, you know how they say time heals all wounds. I'm hoping that with more time it goes away with the continuing the treatments that I do, which is just therapy. I just talk to someone. I hope that it'll continue to get better. But when I got out in 2014, I was an absolute mess, like most people when they get out are. Not only did I have no idea what I was going to be doing with my life now that I wasn't in the military anymore, because I didn't want to get out. I was actually medically retired, and I very much wanted to stay in and continue to serve. So now I'm left with the situation of, one, I've got PTSD, and I've got all these thoughts going inside my head, and I have all this energy, and now I can't put it towards what I was trained to do anymore. And two, it's like, what's next? So both those things hit at the same time very hard for me. And luckily, I actually got in touch with Carrie, who's over at First Counseling at First Baptist. She's a great therapist and is actually doing great things with PTSD. She volunteers a lot of her time to help veterans specifically. She's tried all sorts of new therapy techniques. She's on top of it. And we're working with her over the years. I mean, I've gotten myself down to a very manageable level, I would say. I mean, you can ask if my wife was on. She still deals with some stuff, me waking up with sweats in the middle of the night, all that, those still dealing with anxiety attacks. But being able to talk about the things that I've seen and actually enjoy my life, has, it seems like it improves every year.
Yeah. And the times that I've been with you, Brian, I would say that I would have known half of what you've described to me as experiences that would cause this kind of an impact in one's life, I wouldn't have seen any of that. And so you're doing great, at least from my perspective.
I
would say that, you know, the external, the what we show off to other people and what we put there for them to see is often like the tears of a clown. It's really not what's going on the inside, but you seem to be handling it very well. And kudos to,
thank you. I appreciate it.
Kudos to those that have helped you over there. And I'm sure that you had a lot of people that you knew over there that may still be dealing with the dregs of it. Really the rough part.
Absolutely. And I would, I mean, I met even more since I've gotten out. I was a part of a Wounded Warrior Project peer support group there for about 2 years. Met a lot of veterans in that support group that I still stay in contact with. Most of them have become friends. And we all lean on each other now for just dealing with, I mean, even if it's just something, just, you know, what, getting worked up about just having an interaction with someone, just being able to call that veteran buddy and just vent about it and get everything off your chest, brings down that anger level, brings down everything, helps you react better in situations. And I would say most of the people that are doing the same thing I'm doing, veterans that are actually trying to get better, there's plenty of systems that have been put in place to actually help us. I feel bad for the veterans that feel like there is nothing that's out there to help them, because there definitely is. It's just, you have to want to really, truly get better and want to be better every day. Otherwise, you're not going to be.
Now, we know that post-Vietnam era, when veterans would come in, the country is now known as not being one that was very receptive or very welcoming back to those that served in that era. How is it coming back for vets like yourself?
Well, I'd say that, I mean, we're loved and welcomed for the most part. I mean, I think I've only had, gosh, they're so hard. Like, I think I've had one time where someone was rude to me in an airport because of the uniform I was wearing, and I was in California. So I think it was expected. But
it's sad to say, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is. But I hang out at the VFW with Vietnam veterans a lot, and the amount of disrespect they got compared to the amount of respect I got is just,
it's crazy.
It's astronomical, how they were treated. But luckily, like I said, our nation seems to be on track of really trying to take care and do better by us. And one of the big things that they're doing is trying to really revamp the VA to make sure that takes care of the healthcare issues that we're experiencing now. I know a lot of vets are experiencing, for my generation, you know, how Agent Orange in the Vietnam era were dealing with burn pits. Apparently, the stuff that they were piling into these giant lakes of fire in Iraq and Afghanistan, just burning everything, the trash, the feces, the bodies, the batteries, the metal, has caused a multitude of health problems for veterans that they are holding in Congress a whole burn pit committee to determine how to get these covered, because they gave
All that stuff's in the air.
Yeah, and they gave sovereign immunity to the companies that did it, just like they gave to the people who made Agent Orange. So they don't have to worry about the repercussions. It's just titanium dust is being seen in veterans' lungs now, causing micro blood clots. I just myself over the past year came down with 3 autoimmune conditions all in like 8 months. And it seems like that's the way a lot of veterans are going right now, just getting thyroid issues, skin issues, all from the fun things that we were exposed to. So if it's not PTSD, it's health issues. But like I said, luckily, I think and I believe that we are living in a country that's trying to go the right way by that.
Now, you know, there's an old saying that there are no atheists in foxholes.
I'd say that's true.
All right, that's what I was going to ask you. You already answered my question. You were a person of faith already before you went, and even, as you've already said, volunteering for some of the most difficult action, some of the most dangerous duty. But tell me a little bit about how that you would see faith in the lives of those with whom you served.
Well, I think along with that, cliche thing. Also, they say that the number one word that's said in a combat is God, and the second's mama. So I'd say in the firefights I've been, I've heard both called quite a bit. Faith seemed to go out, unfortunately, for most people in the platoons and units that I was in, out the door just very quickly, because I guess it's just seeing the amount of things that we saw every day over and over and over really tests it, puts it to the fire, so to speak.
Now, when you say go out the door, you mean people lose their faith?
Not lose their faith, but definitely aren't focused on it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because what feels like is going to get you through that immediate moment isn't who's above you, or it's who you feel is going to be to your left and to your right, and the gun that's in your arms. And after you get that first situation where you're just constantly getting hit by roadside bombs over and over and over again, and it doesn't matter if you pray the night before that, like, just let me go out and have a safe mission this time. And then the next day you go out and you get hit by a bomb and you lose a buddy.
Mm-hmm.
Very quickly, you feel like those are going unheard. So what becomes faith for people becomes faith in the Army. You know, faith that my brother is going to get me home before my God will, which was my mentality for quite some time. And after I got out, I was able to see through much clearer eyes that I dodged bullets and bombs with, I've got all my fingers, my toes, my brain might be a little bit scrambled and I get headaches and stuff like that. But all in all, I am incredibly blessed to go through the things that I went through.
He was watching over you much more than you were realizing.
But it's hard to see when you're in it. I think that goes for everyone. I don't want to speak for everyone, but it's really, really hard to see when you're in it.
That's very helpful to hear. And I think it really does help prayers to go up for those that are still serving. Mm-hmm. I know that there's a lot of our military, even to this day, and in fact, there are new theaters of war that are going on right now that are heating up, and we just don't know what it's going to happen, what will take place. But you served, like we said, in those two big areas of conflict that were some of the most difficult for our country in the last several years. And it was an area of a lot of fighting and a lot of misery by our troops. And so, boy, that is something. You mentioned early on this device that ended up becoming now something that you were interested in, this drone thing that went out. While you're there in the fighting, tell me a little bit about what it was like seeing something like that in action. And then did any of that translate to you maybe even while you were there, about what you would do after all of this was over?
Well, I'd start off saying that seeing America's technology in action is, you very quickly realize why people say we have one of the best militaries in the world. Because honestly, we do. I mean, it's the technology that we use on the battlefield, between being able to communicate with a drone that's flying at 16,000 feet above us, that it just looks like a blip to us. But when they're showing, when they're casting their screen to your screen inside your vehicle, you're literally able to see like all the people moving on the ground, and they can laser target that missile that launches from that drone. I mean, within 5 meters of you, which is just crazy. I mean, so the technology that's there, it definitely got me interested in it. And I would say that little drone, I didn't even think I would be doing anything with that. As a matter of fact, when I got out of the Army, I went back to doing what I did in high school. I started a mobile detailing business, detailing cars, and that company became very successful, and I was able to step away from it and sell that company to my best friend. And then I was able to dabble in old politics, which I never thought I would see myself doing either, and ultimately ended on deciding doing this drone business, which was because my hobby was taking photos, videos, and flying drones. I'm like, how can I combine this into just doing one thing that I love to do and getting paid to have fun at the same time? And that's how Boundless Drone Services was born.
All right, now we got to go back though.
Yeah, sorry.
We got to go back to the politics for a second. Tell me about that. I had not heard about that.
Yeah, so when I got out, and that's actually how I met your director, Brittany, and we met working on Representative Mike Miller's campaign, which he's no longer a state rep. He works for, I believe, an Alzheimer's nonprofit foundation. No? Am I wrong on that? I got involved in his first campaign back in 2014 at the same time I was running that business right when I first got out, and ended up working as his district aide for a little while. And then the VA came in and said that they reevaluated me, made me 100%, and I was able to take a step back and just hang out with my daughter, focus some time in on her. And yeah.
100% so. Disabled?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep. So. Yeah. So with that, it gave me a little more freedom. But yeah, I dabbled in in politics, and now I still do stuff with when somebody needs me to volunteer to do something like throwing up some signs or work a corner during the polling thing. If it's somebody that I believe in, absolutely, I go out and do that.
Well, I got to ask one more question about that, because then you were working for somebody that was a candidate. You've not run yourself for any positions.
No, right? I have not run myself for any positions. No.
Yeah. Are you thinking about that?
You know, I've had a couple people approach me, but I don't think my personality would go so far. I'm too brash, I think, for current day politics. So no, I don't think I would.
Okay. I'm just wondering, because there's a lot of people that I've met recently, young people like yourself, that are getting in and working to make a difference.
I think that's important, because I think, honestly, the voices that are currently in are disconnected from very much the pulse of America. So I think it's good to get some younger people in that are more on the ground and seeing what we need.
What do you think it's going to take to make that happen?
A shift in thought processing, which I don't know if it's going to happen, but it really needs to, people need to wake up and realize that obviously if the system's so broke, the people that have been in office for the past 20 or 30 years are part of the broken system. Only way to reset that is to get them all out and put new bodies in. Mm-hmm. But I don't see that happening. Mm. So that's my personal opinion.
Mm. Brian Fay, my guest today, and he is with Boundless Drone Services. And he got to play around with some of those really fancy government-owned drones when he was in the military. And it is no secret that these things are being used. We've seen actual footage of some things that would be the type of drones that are used for surveillance, like you mentioned. I did not realize they flew quite that high, and the kind of images they return are just wonderful there.
And carry quite a combat payload as well.
Yeah. All the while able to fire one of those things with amazing laser precision.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing. It is a day in which we live. And now we're seeing that kind of technology, just like it's always been done, used now in the civil sphere and in businesses and commercials. And while we're at it, it is always good to remember that one way we can support all of those, like Brian, who are veterans is to support businesses that are operated by veterans. Let's do that. That's an especially great thing to do as we're getting ready to celebrate the 4th of July. We'll be right back. This is Afternoons with Mike, and you're in tune to The Shepherd. Welcome back to the program. I've got Brian Fay with Boundless Drone Services. You know, sitting here talking during the break about the fact that you know Dr. Ben Rawl, which has been on my program a couple of times, and just the people that you know that one from that wonderful church, First Baptist, they're, of course, a big part of what we do here on The Shepherd. And I've had Pastor David on, Pastor Danny on a number of times. It's really great to see the kind of common connections that, Brian, you and I share. But your company, you mentioned all of this about learning about drones and seeing them in action in the military. And, you know, a couple of years ago, I think every American that loves flying like I do, and every person that likes any of the hobbyists' interests in remote control, I've never had a remote-controlled airplane, but I watch videos of them, and I just think it's fantastic. Mm-hmm. Well, then drones come around, and now you can own. I do not own one personally, but I've got a good friend who has, and I've got to see it up close. And just watching it, you can tell that there's going to be a lot of development in this area in the next years to come, because it seems like these things could have the ability to do everything from even, we know that Amazon is looking at them and using them for deliveries.
Yeah.
And do you see a day that drones will be used for transportation?
Absolutely. I don't know if you've seen the other viral video, which is the guy flying on a drone down New York Ave, like in Times Square.
Not seen that.
It is a drone that's got about 8 props on it, and a platform that he can stand on top, and he's got the controller in his hand, and he literally flies it like a skateboard, and just was, I mean, zipping down Times Square. That one was really blown up.
No, I'm going to have to check that one out.
So they're actually coming up with drones, and it started in other countries. Other countries have been using drones for search and rescue techniques. America's honestly behind the curve on a lot of these things. Mm. We just started dipping our toes into that. When the wildfires really got bad out in California, that's when drone companies started really, in America, started making custom drones to do payloads to drop to firefighters on the ground in the middle of forest fire. And now they can carry water tanks and help like put out fires. So they can fly 10 of them over and dump like 100 gallons of water.
It just seems impossible that a drone would be able to lift, because we all know water's heavy.
Absolutely.
How in the world? That's just crazy.
Just really strong motors that they're putting. I mean, like, and the technology's just catching up. They're able to make a smaller motor more powerful, and it's able to carry more weight.
Now, you're into the video business and correct, some photography business as well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, these drones are obviously, carrying a camera is no problem.
Right.
If you can carry 100 gallons of water, you can carry a basically a digital camera, uh-huh, or a camcorder. But the kind of drones that you employ in your company are a step up from just the basics. And you have to be trained, and you have to have a license, right?
Correct, yes. To order, if you're operating a drone outside of a hobbyist, and for commercial use, you're supposed to be Part 107 certified. So that means that I am allowed to fly a drone. I'm allowed to get permission to fly in certain flight paths and around certain airports. Whereas if a hobbyist, if you were to go and try and take off next to an airport, it'll actually pop up with an error saying you do not have permission to fly in this area, and you actually have to move out of the flight zones that you're in.
Mm-hmm.
I actually can just go onto an app and request authorization. They will give me an authorization code to fly at a certain level based on where plane traffic is going.
So basically, when you are looking at your device that is the controller device for that drone, it has, I'm sure then, for you, readouts of your altitude.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
And bearing and all of that, right?
All of that. Mm-hmm. And you even go so far as to set one of the safety features. So if you ever lose connection with your drone, you're actually supposed to estimate the highest object in your area, because you do what's called a return to home height. That's another safety thing that a lot of hobbyists forget, and it makes your drone go to a certain height so that it flies back to the place that it took off. So if you have it set to default, it'll actually just fly right into a building or into a tree, or it won't actually be able to return home at all. Mm-hmm. So there's all sorts of safety things that come into play. And on that little controller, it's I have a Phantom 4 version 2.0, which is they're right under the Enterprise that DJI makes, but they work great, and it's very user-friendly, very AI, a lot of AI features in there. I can tap it, and it'll fly to a direction, and I can control the camera at the same time, so I don't have to focus on flying. But it really, when you jump from hobbyist to commercial, there's a lot more responsibility that you take onto your plate, like as far as flying a drone. And then you have to realize that they can cause damage and hurt people if you're not careful.
When you think about the kind of job that you've done with different clients, what would be the most unusual thing that comes to mind that you've been able to shoot with your drone?
Well, actually, so the most unusual thing for our company was we actually got commissioned by Belle Isle Police Department when a lady went missing, and they were using almost all the drone companies in the area to search the local Conway community, Belle Isle area, for this lady's vehicle. They were pretty sure that she had driven it into a retention pond or one of the swamp areas of forest. So we were being assigned grids and searching for a vehicle. Another drone company is the one that found it. So the sheriff pilots missed it. The search teams have missed it. And in the end, drone companies with, you know, couple $1,000 drones just flying around all day is who found where this lady's car was located.
And was it in water or something?
It was in water. Yeah. And unfortunately she was not alive anymore. There was all sorts of situations surrounding it. She apparently had drank and drive and was a mother and ended up crashing her vehicle into the water. So,
but how did that drone find it?
You could literally see the top of the vehicle under the water. So flying over retention ponds off the roads, so they just kept retracing the routes that she might have gone and kept setting the search areas for that. I mean, this was something that the poor husband, he had set up an RV in the area where she had been missing from the Walmart parking lot. I mean, he was just begging drone pilots to come out and setting up grid patterns for things to get searched. Mm-hmm. So I think everybody had answered the call on that and wanted this to get found, and that was my most unusual thing. Everything else is kind of, you know, flying over homes, flying over weddings is a big one. Corporate events. I know that I've done
real
some
estate.
Real estate is a huge.
Huge.
Yeah, that's actually what first started the company, was doing just droning real estate, and then kept getting asked to do more. So
now you've done this now for a couple of years.
For a year, actually, just a year.
Just 1 year.
Yep,
okay.
Just been in business for a year.
What would be, do you think, the direction that might not have been here a year ago that you suddenly, you think, well, okay, drones could be used for this. Is there something like that?
What we're currently using drone for right now is very heavily in real estate. We had a lot of directions that we were going to go when we first started a year ago. And I think we've narrowed our things down right now for at least the next 2 year goal. We did want to get into search and rescue, and we wanted to get into agricultural. Those are two big new things in Florida that are blowing up for drones. Fire departments in our local area are actually training drone pilots and buying drones of their own and running integrated systems to use drones for search and rescue. So you're about to see drones all the time, probably more than helicopters in the sky. So it's definitely, we ended up honing this in on film production. I think what we ended up doing was using our drones to be adaptable to when somebody needed video captured, we capture it with a drone. We also, and then later added multiple other cameras to our equipment so that we could capture video footage on the ground as well.
Do you see yourself being used for future movies in Central Florida?
I hope so. Actually, you know, we're talking about trying to do a documentary video of our own this summer and start that. And but we are finally starting getting some big partnerships in the local area. I don't know if you know Maruti Transportation Company. We're going to be doing their marketing for the next 180 days and doing all their video and social media marketing. and a couple other ones that can't, the deal's not closed up on yet, but things are starting to get, we're starting to lean more towards video marketing for people and providing the video content that they need to market their business on social media, their website, YouTube, wherever video shows, we're giving them the video that they can use to show it.
Now, we were talking before we began recording this interview, we were talking about the fact that in this day and age, we, and it's a great thing, and sometimes it's not a great thing, but we live in a day in which everyone literally is carrying a fairly good quality video camera with them everywhere they go.
Absolutely.
And that is just itself a kind of a testimony to our technology and the advances that we've made. But just because we have them doesn't mean that we're able to use them in a professional manner.
Or have the time. Or have the time to use them in a professional manner. Absolutely.
And then you have to add the fact that none of us can fly around like a drone can with our iPhones in our hand. So, you know, your business is got to be something exciting for you to see the immense amount of options for how you can use what you guys do.
I think it's that. And I truly like it, being that this is my second business being run. I like helping other businesses get what they need to grow their business. It gives me a level of satisfaction than seeing like my work being put onto a video camera and seeing everything come together in that final cut. That's what's really exciting to me. Mm-hmm. And then seeing the, you know, one thing that we started doing when we were growing last year was every veteran owned business that I knew, friends, I started giving them free commercials. And I know for a fact, one of the veterans, he's now, because of that commercial, he's a knife maker in Ocala. His knives have gotten picked up in 2 gun shops and are now being carried in gun shops. So it's just, I love seeing the growth that happens because somebody chose to like push their company to the next level. Like, yeah, I'm a small business. But why can't I have a commercial? Why don't I deserve to be seen on Facebook or Instagram just like every other big? And that's where I really enjoy doing.
Well, we have been able to use your services and we love that. And all of our Mark radio stations are benefiting from your expertise. And we are so grateful for what you're doing and really excited about just finding the ways that, especially for drones. Now, that's something that I don't think you've used any of the drone work with us yet, but I can see a futures commercials where you could do for radio stations, TV stations that would be using that drone to show the towers and all of the things that happen.
Or any live events that you guys do as well. Absolutely.
Yeah. Now that would be something else. Are there restrictions that a lot of venues would put? I'm thinking about the fact that I've heard that over some of the parks in Central Florida, you're not allowed to fly over them.
Disney is one of the big ones. Disney, I don't know if Universal has the same restrictions. I don't want to speak and be wrong on that, but I know for a fact Disney property, they make it incredibly illegal to fly over their stuff.
And if a person did it, they probably have the abilities to know that it was done.
Correct. And then if like God forbid some reason that drone goes down, the risk is that every drone is tracked to a specific user number. There's no way that they're not going to know who was flying that drone. It's FAA registered. Even if it's a hobbyist, when you sign on and register that drone, FAA now has a track record of that. So it's not worth the risk if all of a sudden you're flying over Universal or Disney to get the firework shot and a firework hits that drone and it comes plummeting down to the ground. Well, they're going to find it. They're going to be like, we know who this belonged to. I know that parks are state parks are fine. National parks are a no-go. But there's, with anything, you can get permission. It's not a no-go because of the laws. It's a no-go because they want to limit how many drones are being allowed into the park.
And that could become very obtrusive, obviously, to the beautiful scenery.
Yeah, you don't want to see 20 drones flying around.
Right, exactly. That could be real distracting right there. Tell us your website, if you will.
So my website is boundlessdroneservices.com. And there you can actually see everything that we're doing in real estate, film production, business video commercials, and also sport athlete marketing as well.
Well, it's great to have you here, Brian. We look forward to working together more in the future. And thank you for taking the time to coming over and being part of my program.
Thank you for having me.
It's great. Brian Fay, Boundless Drone Services. And friends, that's all of our time for today. Thank you for joining us. We'll catch you next time right here on The Shepherd.
Afternoons with Mike, brought to you by Palm Beach Atlantic University, Orlando.